Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/new.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus, and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Welcome, welcome to this week's Lean Into Clean show. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. I'm excited about today. We've got a very exciting guest, which is very timely in terms of what's going on in the world this week. As many of you may know, this week is COP28. It is the climate change conference where all the world nations and world states come together and try and decide on what is best for each individual country and what is best for the whole of the world when it comes to making decisions around the climate crisis or runaway climate that we currently have happening in our planet today. As you know, the Paris Agreement was the original basis of the agreement, but actually since that was agreed, many, many countries have not actually been able to commit to the necessities that are required in order for us to bring down our fossil fuel usage and our carbon emission usage, etc., etc. So the reason why this is important is because if we can get everybody on the same page, where there's wealthy countries and not so wealthy countries and countries that have had benefits from industrial revolution and other countries that are just up and coming, you know, we all need to understand that this is going to have a knock-on effect for every single person being element on the planet. So it's so important that we can get some kind of unified collaborative commitment starting this Friday. And this particular COP happens to be in Dubai. So it's another, UAE country. And, we all know that from that area and that part of the land is where a lot of the oil comes from. A lot of the wealth that's been made for those countries has come from the fossil fuel industries. So what's brilliant about today's guest is he is described as the green sheikh. Now, this gentleman is actually called Sheikh Abdul Aziz. Sheikh Abdul Aziz, welcome to Lean Into Clean. Thank you for coming to join us. What part of the world are you in today? Are you in Dubai?
Thank you, Javis. I'm in Dubai and part of the world. We are all connected.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. How did you get the title Green Sheikh, the Green Sheikh? How did that come about?
Well, Green Sheikh, G for global, R for rethink, then E for ethics, then other E for environment, then N for network. So this is, it is not recognition, it is not a title, it's really an effort, right? I got this 40 years ago through my volunteering, through advocacy of the environment. I wasn't working with the government. I was working with the business. I just working with the passion, with the growth, like a grassroots from the community. So advocate this is comes from my passion, from my background. I was a chemical engineer and petroleum engineer. Mm-hmm. And then gave me a shift to, you know, we say if you want to go to heaven, you have to practice first, go to the hell. So you understand what heaven means.
Right.
So the career, the volunteering, the commitment for me started in 1990. And I really formed this title is not for show, no, title for action.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Thank you very much. And for those of us that might not actually know what a sheikh actually is, would you just tell us why do you get the title sheikh?
Good question. You know, some people are confused. They said, you know, sheikh. When you write it, S-H-E-I-K-H, pronounce it sheikh, but actually it's sheikh.
Sheikh is somebody... I got it right then. Thank goodness for that.
Yes. Sheikh is somebody sympathic, looks, you know, gentleman, elegant. You look good, sheikh. But actually, it's sheikh is a name of a leader. He's a tribal leader or ruling family. Or a person in Islamic tradition, sheikh means a scholar, mean a person who hold the high degree and knowledge that he can teach and train people about his expertise.
Okay, so which one of them applies to you?
Might be all of them.
All of them. Okay. Thank you. That's very, very kind. So, you know, I was reading your just a bit of information about you. Let's call it kind of a mini bio, if you like. But it says here, your mission has been to raise global awareness at many levels, from developing and empowering youth to supporting and sponsoring 900 orphans to sustaining more than 5,000 unfortunate individuals and underprivileged families through the Al Ihsan charity, which you oversee as an executive president. Is that still a role you play?
Yes. This is part of people who are really have some less fortunate opportunities in the UAE, who have some suffer of single mothers or have some employees problems or financially. So we partnership with the government and also with the private sector as a business people, so they can we do a project, empower the women, single mothers, families, and those orphans, so they have the opportunity to go putting last first.
Yeah, okay, lovely. And then the next bit, it says you were appointed environmental advisor to the Ajman government, and previously you were international senior board advisor of Wana Forum in Jordan. What tell me about the Ajman government. What is that?
Yes, Ajman government, I just give advice. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally in a government position.
Okay.
Advice, or sometimes they have a project, social impact or environmental impact assessment. So mm-hmm. they give something, a review. I suggest, I advise, I collect a team, international team, local team, voluntarily, and mm-hmm. to help Ajman to see where the site, the future for Ajman to be sustainable. Then they take action. Either they take it or they put it on the side. It's their decision. So we just advisory to keep them, you know, alert about sustainability in future.
Okay, brilliant. Is it a challenging role? Are you there to challenge and to keep them kind of in line?
Very challenging. You know, there are some priorities economics priorities, political priorities, many things, financial problems. So it is really challenging, you know.
Yeah, yeah, good, good. But it's good that they've got somebody challenging them. So, so tell me, I mean, you said that your background, you were educated in chemical and petroleum engineering. Now, of course, that goes hand in hand, clearly, with the environment, the family that you've been brought up in, the business economy, et cetera, et cetera. But why is it that you've chosen, having that background and training, that you've chosen to go into environment, sustainability, green economy, renewable energy? You know, what is it that made you gravitate more to a sustainable future?
Early 90s, you know, I was to be a volunteer in one of the society called Environment Friend Society. It's actually not pressure group, but it's society building awareness through university, through the public, through the media, to the community. So at that time, I'm still an engineer working in oil and gas. And then I found myself in an engineering. It's a potential as financially, but my passion is more to see the future. In early 90s, people still don't talk too much about the environment.
Mm.
So I was really passionate. And then I said, no, I need to see how I can really make a difference in my life. I want to make something change. And the change I can do is transformation. So I can transfer myself from this career to another career, to the environmental side career. So when I shift, I went back to career to study more in environmental science, environmental engineering. And I went abroad. I went to Japan, to Australia, to United States, to learn more scientifically, engineering-wise, to have that tools and knowledge. And can when I talk, I can talk confidently.
Yeah, okay, brilliant. And you know, one last question just about you on from a personal perspective. So you were born into a family that presumably is incredibly wealthy, has a huge impact on the fossil fueled industry around the world. What was it like when you were growing up? What was your kind of childhood experiences? Was it everything on a silver platter, as they would say in the UK? I mean, what was that experience like?
Not really that the one you're saying. I wasn't spoiled. My dad, you know, gave me a chance to prove myself, to be self-made rather than just family-made. You know, I studied in public schools with people different layer in the society, normal people, average people, high people. I didn't go to private school. I went to public school.
Mm-hmm.
When I graduated from high school, I went to university, and few people know that I'm from ruling family because I want to go and study to get the knowledge, not to get the title. So my father and actually my parents raised me not to be, you know, a person highlighted with royalty. They want me to be a great person. A great person, that's I can make an effort. I can work myself. I can develop, you know, my self-development. I think that stretch, even my parents, is different than others' parents. Mm. They show us the way how we can struggle, how there are many challenges. So I didn't eat with the golden,
Yeah.
With a knife. No, I eat with my hands. I wash my hands clearly. I eat with my hands. I eat on the floor, not on the tables. So we live with the poor people. We live with the rich people. We live with different layer of people. So that's we going to serve. Leader mean a servant. Mm. Leader mean a servant. So we serve people. And we go to their level to understand their needs as well, to see how capacity we can help them.
Yeah, thank you. Just lay some context for your kind of early experiences. What was there a moment in your life where you absolutely critically and radically knew that you had to commit your leadership and responsibility to the environment? Was there a particular single moment, or was there a number of things that got you on that path?
There are two parts because I love outdoors activity, especially scuba diving and skydiving. When I do scuba diving, I noticed that's early 90s. When I see the coral reefs, I imagine that coral reefs talking to me. He said, Abdulaziz, Sheikh Abdulaziz, please help us. We are in distress. in this planet. We are the indicators. If you want to see the planet sick, we are the first species or the first hand to see the planet sick or have disease through the coral reefs. And these corals are really like they're talking to me. You have to change. You have to talk to people up there. You go up to the water, the surface, to the land, talk to the people and tell them that they have to change. If they don't change, you know, there will be one day something happened.
So I love that.
This analogy, you know, it's really moved me because I am so love the nature. I love the sea. I love the beauty of the forest and the desert. I'm a person who really passionate to embrace that nature. That's really, you know, empower me to see, listen, as a sheikh, I want to divert myself into from political, economical, into environmental, and to be advocate for young people, for the community, and for the globe.
Amazing. It puts a smile on my face. I don't know if you know anything about my history, and I won't go into too much detail now, but I had a very similar experience where I felt like I was spoken to by Mother Nature, who gave me a mission and a purpose. So when we meet next week, I'd love to share that with you, but I'm not going to waste that time now. So thank you for putting a smile on my face. I could feel what you were saying in my heart, and I'm sure many of our listeners will as well, because you're absolutely right. One of the biggest issues that humanity has done is lost that connection with nature, with Mother Nature, with the elements, with the animals, with the seas, with the trees, you know, all of that. So thank you for stepping up and really stepping into your purpose. Now I understand why we've connected. It makes a lot more sense to me. Thank you. We're gonna play your first song. I asked you to bring a couple of songs that are either a soundtrack to your life or a soundtrack to what we describe as the climate crisis. And you've given me a beautiful song. I listened to it before we spoke. It's called Humood. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, by Miss Danique. Why have you chosen this song? Oh, sorry, please.
Jefferson, Humood is the name of the singer.
Ah, Humood is the name of the singer. And Miss Danique is the name of the song.
Mistanik mean I'm waiting for you. Mistanik in English is I'm waiting for you. So this is the name of the song. Mistanik, I'm waiting. And Humood is a person who sing this song.
Ah, excuse my ignorance. Thank you very much. So we're going to play that song and then we're going to cut to a commercial break and we'll come straight back to you after the break. So let's hear this beautiful song, Mistanik by Humood.
The station that makes you feel good.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, I'm Jarvis Smith. I'm here talking to the Green Sheikh, Abdul Aziz, in Dubai. Abdul Aziz, I'd love to talk to you now just a little bit about COP28, because as you know, it's launching on Friday. You're going to be involved. I'm going to be involved. As far as I can understand it, if the science is correct, there are three major issues when it comes to the mitigation of the issues that we have on our planet today. There's climate. Clearly, the climate is changing. We've got biodiversity loss and ecosystem breakdown. And then we've got pollution and toxicity. They seem to be the three major issues. And if the IPCC report is correct, which is the Independent Panel for Climate Change report, human behavior is responsible, as far as we can tell, for the speeding up of the carbon emissions on this planet. Now, when I look into the basic scenario of this, it's overusage of fossil fuels, number one, i.e. oil and some other aspects of energy. And also the disregard for our planet in terms of, you know, taking out the trees, the forests, et cetera, et cetera. So those two seem to be the major two issues. Now, you come from an oil background. Would you say that assessment is correct, that fossil fuels is one of the biggest emitters and damaging parts that is contributing to this thing we're calling a climate crisis?
Jarvis, yes, this is a fact. I agree 100%. 75% of the climate change causes from fossil fuels, 75%. And if we cut the 75%, where it comes from industry, from transport, from other sources. Those are the most contributors for climate change. Of course, you mentioned that deforestation is one of them. There are other things about even the methane comes from the agriculture also. There are another part. So there are several, but those are the hydrocarbons is number one, 75%. And we have the causes. We go like Ishikawa, as a principle of Japanese called Ishikawa analysis, called fish bone analysis. You see the causes from the bones, the part of the bones, which is fossil fuels, loss of biodiversity, water scarcity, agriculture. There are some overlapping between them, by the way, because it's very complex. You cannot say just this. It's very complex. Yeah. And the effect is rising temperature, rising seawater, heat, rising the heat, flood, disasters, many things could that happen on the effect. Exactly. This is now where we can put the heavy scale is on fossil fuel.
Okay. So there's a bit of controversy, certainly in the country that I'm in the UK, about COP28. And its leader this year, as far as I know, because that's what we're being told in the headlines, is also the CEO of a oil company. Do you have a different version of that from where you are, from where you sit?
Well, Sultan Al-Jaber, as I knew him, he's a person who founded the Master City, the sustainable city, which is zero neutral carbon city, like 20 years ago. And he founded this as a concept worldwide. Doesn't matter it is work 100% or didn't work. It has an impact globally and challenges many countries around the world. So he was founded this. Then the oil company have lacking of problems of solving, you know, emissions, zero flaring, carbon capturing things. So who they brought? They brought somebody from sustainability, oil and gas. And listen, you have certain of time. Show us how we can reduce emission 2030. How we can introduce and invest renewable energy. How we can combine cleaner energy with renewable energy with better natural gas. Now, believe me or not, he's producing now hydrogen fuel, green hydrogen fuel in Abu Dhabi, one of the stations. It's becoming a fuel for vehicles.
Okay, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. So, of course, I mean, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? That you need somebody to be able to, you know, work with the new technologies around energy that has a background from the old technologies, right? I mean, of course, that kind of makes sense, which I'm guessing is similar to you. You've understood the business world from oil and petroleum. You're now working in renewables and sustainability and environment protection. What do you think, from your experience, what do you think the solution is? What do we need to do as a species?
Jarvis, it is the solution is there. We don't know to create the wheel. It's there. Just we need, you mentioned that earlier before the broadcast, commitment, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, collaboration. Number three, action. Three things. So we're losing. We have solutions. If you sit with all the committee, the technical, they have all the solutions, but they're not putting on the action. Mm. You got. So these are the challenges.
And would you say, are those solutions, you know, me being a kind of fairly layman when it comes to this, although I probably know more than most, but are those solutions solar? Are those solutions wind? Are those solutions, you know, sea technologies, et cetera, et cetera? Is it drawing upon the natural solutions in order for us to transition from fossil fuels to renewables?
Are you talking to MENA region or Gulf region or worldwide?
Well, I think worldwide. I mean, it's got to be a global. It's got to be a global commitment, right?
Sure. Yes. All these renewables, clean technology, we need to put them together as a mix. Yeah. Don't need just to see one tool. We want to have, like, I have a friend of us, indigenous people from Mexico, mm-hmm. and they preserve a biosphere called Sierra Gorda. Mm-hmm. I'm their ambassador. They're coming to COP28 to give one of the solution is carbon credit.
Great, great. Well, I want to talk to you some more about that, because carbon credits, you know, it's got a bad, it's had a bad press, if you like, because I think that, you know, the first round of carbon credits, people were offsetting, and we do realize that offsetting is not a solution. It's just a way of, you know, continuing with more of the same and then offsetting, which we need to, as far as I can see, be putting back, right? So tell me about carbon credits. How could carbon credits work? Effect, you know, with immediate effect.
You know, investing that's in other countries, like in the UAE now, have Arena, and Arena have millions of dollars. They're going investing renewable energy in different countries, like in Cuba, and Costa Rica, and these Latin American who are poor countries, but they don't have the money and the investment to develop there. So when you're putting these farms around the world, then you are participating with carbon credit.
Yeah, got it. So it's a credit that is actually drawing, you know, creating a resource to capture energy, and then that goes into the kind of carbon credit system. Yeah, got it. Exactly. And you know, you personally, or the organization that you are part of, is that a fund? Is it a business? Is it a how does it work from your perspective?
I played two roles: my individual role as a Green Sheikh, and from corporate role. From corporate role, we do partnership from government, private, and NGOs. So we do like social or corporate social responsibility through the partnership, and they fund this program, either training program, or a capacity building program, or advisory program that I can sometimes advise to the university, the academia, for projects that can be sufficient and be appropriate to be launched in the country.
Okay, great. And if there are people out there with amazing ideas of how to do that, are they able to just kind of pitch ideas to you, or how does that work?
No, it's go to different channels. Either go to the climate change ministry channel, or come to some other organization, or we see there's like a competition. They can come in and they show, and we will select based on their presentation and based off the benchmark, what the standard are they using, and mm-hmm. how they can solve a problem with the new innovation.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Thank you. Thank you. Because I know people will be listening, going, "I've got some great ideas." That's fantastic. Thank you. So, what role will you be playing at COP28 this year? What are you hoping to achieve?
Number one is changing the mindset of young people. Mm-hmm. The political is a little bit challenging, but through the young people, they can change the policymakers.
What do you think is the mindset of the young people?
They need what the voice or what sort of sound they're going to use to talk to the decision makers in a way that persuasive, that creative, and can attract their attentions. So what we create a climate champions, younger, like a generation of 12, 13, 14 years old. Those they have scenarios, and they're going to demonstrate causes, effect, and solutions.
Okay, so thank you for that. Let's look at something like Greta Thunberg, yeah? Fridays for Future movement, She also works in the FFF mapper, which is the most affected people in areas, which is predominantly people from the global south and poorer countries, etc. So she's been campaigning now for years. Do you think that's had an impact on global leaders' decision making?
No.
So what's going to change now with what you're saying?
Because the Arab's voice wasn't heard yet.
Ah, okay. And why is the Arab's voice important?
Because this is the time now, and COP28 is on a platform that their voice can be heard to the decision makers.
Please continue.
I remember we did similar version COP22 when we were in Marrakesh, in Morocco. We brought 50,000 students around the world to make a white paper and to discuss about the best solution they can make the voice and send it to their decision makers.
And you think that could have an impact? I mean, what strikes me now, and I'm not trying to be controversial with you at all, but what strikes me now is, and this is the feeling that I've got, is you can't ignore the climate crisis anymore. You can't ignore planetary boundaries being broken. You can't ignore pollution. You can't ignore heat temperatures rising. You can't ignore floods. So it seems to me that, you know, when the Paris Agreement happened at COP15, or I think it was COP15, it seems to me that back then there wasn't any actual true experience of people around the world having, you know, feeling the impacts of climate change, whereas today everybody has, right? And that surely makes it much easier for world leaders to be able to make decisions because it's impacted them firsthand. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I do. When I said about the climate champion is one parameter. The other parameter, I involved with the faith, bringing the faith together. And mm-hmm. how can faith really work to make the climate change has an impact?
Great. And when you talk about faith, I'm presuming you're talking about, are you talking about religion?
Yes.
Yes.
Muslims, Christianity, Judaism, other faith, how the faith can forward climate change to make better solution, better way in terms of awareness, in terms of collaboration, in terms of, making that message is more commitment through the global community.
It's difficult, isn't it, to talk about trusting in faith when, you know, when we've got literally wars happening at this time, which are based on conflicts of faith and religions. I don't want to go into that at all because there's enough news about it. But, you know, from your experience, and of course, you will have a different upbringing to a lot of our listeners because we're based in the UK. How important has faith been to you in making decisions, particularly when it comes to perhaps the greatest of faith is trusting in our planet, Mother Nature, Gaia? You know, I believe the Earth is a conscious, living, breathing being that spiritually helps us connect with, for example, faith. Without the Earth, we wouldn't have anything in order to be able to live. Without the sun, the Earth wouldn't have anything in order to live. So what's the relationship between faith and nature for you?
Stewardship.
Worship.
Stewardship. Stewardship.
Stewardship. I'm sorry. Stewardship. Thank you. It cuts.
Stewardship. Why we are here on this planet. There's a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
We're all human beings, whatever our faith is, whatever our colors, our language, but we have the similarity of living. We eat the same, we sleep the same, we breathe the same, we do the same practices. So I care of you and you care of me because we have same home, the planet Earth. Yeah. And the Earth itself, it has how many words? E-A-R-T-H. If you split the E and H, it will be E for environment and H for human being. Then the three letters is art. This is what we do, how would they make the art. And the art is how we can really respect this Mother Nature with a way of different of science and art and knowledge.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that analogy. Thank you. I always talk about as all, you know, although there are different countries with different sets of beliefs, different upbringings, etc., etc., what I like to remind people about is their indigenous roots, the innate sacred ways of being that we all lived before, your bureaucracy and politics and big business and religion got involved and in the way. Do you think there is an opening for the young people, because perhaps they've seen that religion is not really serving us as a co-creative, collaborative species? Do you think the younger people are reconnecting with those more indigenous ways of being? Do you think there's hope and opportunity for them?
I cannot say that all, but there are many. Many young people are connected, and especially my daughter, Maryam. She's connected with the indigenous people, and they called her now the Blue Shaker.
The Blue Shaker. How old is she?
She's 16 years old.
And what do you say to her about the climate crisis? How do you, what is the way that you, you know, you speak to her about these issues that could potentially drive us to the sixth mass extinction?
I didn't speak to her. She speaks to me.
She speaks to you.
About poem and art. She wrote a poem. If you would like to hear about the her poem.
It's great. Great. I'd love to meet her. I hope I get to meet her next week when I'm over there. So thank you, Abdulaziz. We're going to move to another commercial break. Please don't run away. Stay there. I promise to come back to you with some more questions, and I'll speak to you very soon.
Good. Thank you. Take care.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. This is Lean Into Clean. I'm Jarvis Smith. I'm in conversation with Sheikh Abdulaziz, who is the Green Sheikh. Abdulaziz, you just spoke very beautifully about your daughter. What's her name?
Maryam.
Maria.
Maria. No, Maryam. Maryam.
Maryam.
Maryam.
Maryam.
The English name is Mary. The Arabic name is Maryam.
Okay, lovely. Thank you. What is she saying to you at the moment about, I mean, presumably she's totally engaged in COP28, which is launching on Friday. What kind of information is she sharing with you and nudging you and poking and prodding you at the moment? What does she want you to do?
Shall I read what her writing about the poem?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. She wrote about harmony.
Mm-hmm.
She said, harmony blooms when we are one world. All together, we create peace. As one community, we create a masterpiece. H2O signifies our unity, a beautiful release. Hydrogen, the essence of a human's core. Oxygen, the circle of life in the air. You may feel lost along the way, but follow the light. It'll be your guide. Water flows through everything we see, like freedom. It's wild, pure, and free. The vast, endless ocean, so deep and so wide, a source of life's beauty in its rolling tide. Beneath the sky, where raindrops fall. Beneath the sky, where raindrops fall, children's laughter is a joyful call. With the puddles as their playground, they leap and they play, and it's nature's gift. On a rainy day, our duty is to protect this grand sea for the creatures within it, for you and for me, to protect our earth, keep it alive. Climate change is a challenge we must survive. Us, as a climate champions, we must strive for guiding us toward a sustainable heart. In a world where the temperatures rise high, we take action to reach towards the sky. Let's strive to be greater human beings, keep the oceans clean, give marine life a chance, so children will have a world worth promises to keep. Mariam.
Wow. Wow. When did she write that?
She wrote this a few years ago with the Unity World among Indigenous people about how we all connected like a water.
Yeah, that's absolutely beautiful. I'd really love for our listeners just to reflect on that. And I'd like to play your next song choice and then we'll come back to conversation afterwards. It feels like a moment just to give that those words some space and some music. Would that be okay?
Sure.
This is Earth Song by Michael Jackson. Such a great song. I remember hearing that for the first time because I'm a signed recording artist myself. I was at the Brit Awards when that song was released. And I remember what I was really inspired by for that song was that Michael Jackson had sat in a tree and felt that he'd been given that song from nature, which I just thought was the most beautiful thing. But why did you choose that song? What does it speak of to you?
The connection between human and the planet Earth, and how we're really destroying it without knowing, either purposely or without purpose, you know. So this is what really heart me and heart everyone who care about this planet.
Yeah, lovely. And I love the analogy you used about E and H and then with art in the middle, because it is often the arts that stimulate awakening and consciousness in people. And it has been through the ages. You know, music, I know, was created in order to be prayerful. Actually, it was a prayer. It wasn't for, you know, whatever it's used for today. So tell me, the social and economic effects of climate change in the Gulf region. What are you worried about for your daughter and for her friends and for other people in your region?
Number one, water scarcity. Is number one, because in the region, we desalinate water, seawater. We drink seawater. So it's so costly that we transform that seawater into fresh water. So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we have very, you know, even we don't have winter, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, October or November, the temperature drops to 22, 24, something like that. But still, we are still now in 30s. And we are in early now, December is coming. So the winter is too late. I mean, entering is too late and not early stages. Like last year, a few years ago, our winter comes like in October. But now there's no winter.
So yeah, this has been the hottest year on record, hasn't it? Since records began, this has been the hottest year. Yes. And it's not going to get worse. So temperature, water...
energy demand, because of the temperature is high, so we use air conditions, and air conditions consume a lot of electricity and power. So that's what we need to generate solar energy to get the offset and some of that trend into the energy mix with clean energy, with renewable energy, and with other could be natural gas energy. So this is the second. The third is the food security and agriculture, because there are desertification in the land. We don't have rain. So the land becoming so, with high temperature, becoming dry, and many vegetations died because of those less rainfall. We have only 35 to 40 centimeters a year rainfall. Very poor rain.
Well, I probably had that last night in Yorkshire.
You know, you have it might be in one hour in UK.
Yeah.
It's for us 1 year.
Yeah, I know. It's extraordinary. And does that mean, as wealthy as your country is, does that mean that there is a threat to you and to the state? Because when the climate crisis really, really hits, and 2030 is supposed to be the kind of real pivotal turning point, Does that mean that you may no longer be able to use, you know, the wealth that you have in order to be able to, you know, to buy food, to have relationships with other countries that are going to, you know, naturally offer importation, that, you know, water, you know, suddenly other countries will be trying to hold on to everything themselves, won't they? Because, of course, if there's a limit of stuff, and that could go down by 40 or 50% over time, countries are just going to want to hold on to everything. Do you think that's why borders are closing down and stuff, and people are trying to get more sovereign in the way that they have an approach to geopolitics?
It's very complex.
It is.
Very job. It's very complex, and there's no one solution. No one solution. It's political, economical, environmental, social. It's very complicated. But there are some steps forward. We can go ahead and steps forward that we can do better. You know, survival code and sustainable code. When you say all this wealth gone, we already have the survival code with us, because my ancestors are Bedouin and they live already. They have resilience with the desert. They can manage to live with the camels. We can get rid of cars. We can rid of fossil fuel. We can drink our camel milk. We can have dates. So we can go back to simple and we can survive. Believe me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm deeply rooted in the indigenous ways of this country. In fact, I trained with a female shaman, which is an indigenous wise person, for 14 and a half years before coming into business. So no, I truly with you, and I can't wait to have more conversations with you about it. So we're coming close to the end of the show. We literally have, you know, just a few minutes. But if I asked you, you know, we all know the importance of a greener future, but if you could wave a magic wand, you've already talked about using the Climate Committee of Youth to challenge world leaders in order to get them to make decisions that we need. But what are the things that need to happen? If you could just share the actual things that need to happen that we can all focus on.
Individually or corporate?
From an individual basis, from a global basis, from a, you know, we've got enough time to explore a few of those things that need to happen and very quickly.
Let's share with you on two levels, the individual part and then the corporate or the government part.
Yeah, that'd be great.
The individual part is about practice. What is your behavior, your daily practices, how you sleep, how you eat, how you take shower, how you move, how you exercise, how you daily consume. You go to the market, what do you consume, what do you buy, what the package you take. So this is from individual point of view, is about consumerism. It's about how your attitude toward those recyclable or waste or packaging, how your consciousness, are you aware or not? So this is about behavioral change. And this is not easy. You need education, number one. Number two, you need enforcement. That's level. The from government or from corporate, we need environmental prevention and protection. When I say prevention, from beginning of the source, I need to reduce the toxicity or anything that can harm from the source, not from the end of the source, from the beginning of the pipe. When I say end of the pipe, that's protection. So how I can do that? I can enhance the performance of mean efficiency. I can do eco efficiency. I can make better housekeeping. That's from industrial side, but also from economical growth, transition of the green economy. I can invest on green economy to create jobs. And these jobs could be renewables energy jobs, could be new industry jobs, that making less impact to our environment. Why are we looking for sustainability? Because our actions is destroying our nature resources or natural resources. So we need to shift the paradigm. The employees should be aware. The manager had a policy and a benchmark, and they follow the instructions that do. We, as advocate, we also give incentives, awards, motivation, speaking into the event about showing the best practices. Who's the best practices as either individuals or corporate? They'll have to be nominated. They have to be shown to the people as a good example. I'm a person as a good example. You want to see how my carbon footprint, live with me. I will show you my carbon footprint. I will not tell you that the number is 10 For example, 10 tons of CO2 emissions per year. No, I will show you what this number is being life through the walk, not through the talk. So these emissions are behaviors. When I do programs with young people, young leaders, it's not about on the classroom. Take them on the planet, take them in the desert, take them on the mountain, and to see how their behavior, their interact with nature.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Wise words. Sheikh Abdulaziz, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person and spending some time with you next week. Thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome, Jarvis, and I'm looking forward to take you to the desert, and we'll put you on sand to see how the sand are so powerful, can, you know, purify us and can make us much better.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you. And as a tradition, at the end of the show, as you all know, we're going to play the song called Save the World by yours truly. This is me singing this song. I worked in partnership with Greta Thunberg, Fridays for Futures Movement and MAPA. Thank you to the Swedish House Mafia for letting us use this song. I have committed donating 100% of any money that I would make from performing on this song to the Greta Thunberg Fridays for Futures Movement. This is Save the World by Jarvis Smith. Add it to your playlists. Add it to every play you possibly can, because each play racks up money that we can donate to a good cause. Excellent. This is Save the World.
Excellent. Thank you, Jarvis.